Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
You're going to have a good day here on the dot. Thanks so much for being with us. Happy Monday. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. Sponsored by GEICO. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to GEICO. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to GEICO and save. Coming up this hour on the show, it's a momentous Monday in 20 minutes. An inspirational sports story to get you started this week. Also in 40 minutes, who gagged bigger this weekend? Penn State on Saturday night or the Falcons yesterday on Sunday? Oy! But we begin with Game 5 of the World Series last night. It's all happening! Game 4 was just redonkulous. Game 5, would there be a hangover as the Rays won Game 4 in zany fashion with that insane final play, the walk-off winner in Game number 4? A Rosarena coming around third base, stumbling, falling, getting back up, and sliding into home as the tag went awry for the Dodgers on just one of the most memorable, crazy, bizarre plays in World Series history. Well, the hangover did not last long for the Dodgers as Clayton Kershaw gave a valiant effort last night, got a standing ovation as he came off of the mound, and the Dodgers survive Game 5, 4-3.
Three balls, two strikes, a pitch to Muncy. And there's a fly ball to right. Max Muncy has left the yard in a very big way. And the Dodgers take a 4-2 lead.
We talked about it, and he executed, you know, he held up his part of the deal and got the two hitters, and we didn't say how many pitches. We said two hitters, and that was what we agreed upon. And at that point in time, I felt that I wanted to take the baseball.
So that was Dave Roberts after the win. The Dodgers get the win actually 4-2 last night, and they take a 3-2 series lead. That was Charlie Steiner on Dodgers radio. Clayton Kershaw last night, he wasn't perfect, but didn't need to be. Got the win. It was 5 2/3 of two-run baseball. Gave up 5 hits. Struck out 6. It wasn't as dominant as his Game 1 performance, but it was good enough. 6 strikeouts and 2 walks. The crowd wanted Dave Roberts to keep him in there. Dave Roberts didn't want to keep him in there. It ended up paying dividends as the bullpen comes in and does their job. I am unabashedly a guy that roots for Clayton Kershaw. And the reason is I see so many athletes that I speak to, that I'm around, that we have on the show, or just guys that I don't. And I know what it feels like to see those guys be amongst their peer group and be great, but always have that little but or big but in their resume. You know, when we go to the Super Bowl annually and we're on Radio Row, there are the guys that have the rings. There are the guys that have that big, fat Super Bowl ring, and they're always going to wear that ring, and they're going to flash that ring. And for the rest of their lives, they're going to talk about that time they won the championship. And that ring is symbolic of their moment of glory, which allows them to live forever. They're immortal then. Forever they get to talk about that game or those games. It makes them immortal. And then there's the guys that didn't win it, and there is a hole. And they can talk about their career. They could talk about how great their resume is. And they could talk about all these great games they've been in. But when it comes down to it, they have to stop short of talking about the championship moment. They don't have that. And it is so obvious what type of huge void that is for the legends of the game that don't win it. And I root for guys like Clayton Kershaw because he's one of the best of his generation. He's a slam dunk Cooperstown Hall of Famer. He's been one of the great pitchers in a great franchise's pitching history. But he's 0-for when it comes to that championship. And when you look at guys that have three Cy Youngs, three guys that have been the league MVP, things that he has accomplished, he's the only guy that doesn't also have a World Series championship. So for Kershaw, who's definitely had October demons, and for Kershaw, who's not nearly as dominant and overwhelming as he was 5-6 years ago, I root for him. Because for him to have that ring will mean so much, even if he's dominant or not, to have that ring for all of those times you get together in Cooperstown with your fellow Hall of Famers and you swap stories. You get to say you also won that championship, and you know that feeling. But I have to say, you guys know, I love this Rays team. I love the Rays. I love them because they have absolutely no ego. There is no star power on this team. There's no divas on this team. It is just a bunch of grinders. It is just a bunch of baseball grinders. That you have a moment in time in Tampa Bay because you know the team is going to be broken up once the season is over. Not completely disassembled, but the Rays just simply cannot afford to keep everybody together, especially when you go on deep October runs and the rest of the league goes, oh, that guy's pretty good. I want that guy. So the Rays can do this, you know, once every 7 or 8 years, can have a team like this if they do everything perfectly right. And they're in that moment. And that game four was just bonkers, but it's an outcome because the Rays are relentless. And last night, Manny Margot having the guts to try to steal home. I mean, come on. He's trying to steal home. The first player in World Series history to try to steal home since 82, nearly 40 years ago. Nobody's tried it since and comes oh so close. The Rays are an amazing story. I also, by the way, loved their hats last night. I mean, there is a glowing stingray on the hat of a team in the World Series. There is something, well, I am a uniform traditionalist. There is something amazing about this because they never had the tradition. So they get to be wonky. This is not a team that has had a jersey combination for 60 years suddenly going weird. It's a team that's always been weird and just dusting off one of their old school weird hats. Last night they're wearing the glowing Devil Ray hat. It's just the best. But for the Dodgers, a step away from the World Series, it's not like this series is over. It's not like this series is over at all. Because the Rays are never going to allow it to be over. But for Clayton Kershaw, that was likely his last appearance in this World Series. If the Dodgers win the World Series, he would have had a hand in two of their four wins. And for that, I feel good for him. And I feel good that If they close this thing out, Kershaw will have his ring and will have at least somewhat adjusted his reputation as a October choke artist. Mraz, what was your takeaway from Game 5 of the World Series last night?
Well, with a tie with Kershaw, I'll say credit to Dave Roberts, too, because I think Dave Roberts has done a good job of both managing to finally figure out a way to win a World Series here with the Dodgers, but also managing not to ruin everything that Clayton Kershaw's put out there and have everybody think what they want to think about Kershaw. He took Kershaw out at the exact right moment last night in the sixth, did it in Game 1. He had him leave right before trouble could truly be brewing for him. And now, if we look at this, he's managed the bullpen the right way. Kelly Jansen, obviously very questionable as his closer anyway, and we saw that on Saturday night. But if in the end the Dodgers figure out a way to win this, and I think they will, because even if you get to a Game 7, they'll have Walker Buehler sitting there, Kershaw will have had his hand in two of the four wins, and Dave Roberts never allowed him to go far enough where he could have choked and had that been the ultimate blemish. Well, you know, Clayton Kershaw couldn't finish the job in the seventh. Like, that story, Dave Roberts never allowed that to happen, and I think the balance of making sure that didn't happen for Kershaw while also making sure you're navigating this bullpen the right way has been perfect managing for Dave Roberts in this series.
Yeah, the reality is that Kershaw's not as dominant as he was 6 or 7 years ago. And because of all of the October hiccups and meltdowns, you can't trust Kershaw to go in there in those big spots anymore and dominate. You kind of know that the case of the yips might happen. So every step along the way, Roberts has been a little early on his hook for Kershaw instead of being a little late, because a little late could mean everything unravels. And once again, it's a disaster for the Dodgers and for Kershaw. So by being a little early, as you said, he's protected the image and protected the performances of Kershaw. And now Kershaw and the Dodgers are on the doorstep of a championship. How insane was game number four? I mean, it was game four on Saturday night, one of the most memorable. It was very reminiscent of that Twins and Braves 91 World Series where it felt like every game was crazy. That game number four has got to be one of the craziest World Series games of the last 50 years.
And it wasn't just the ninth inning. It was the swings all leading up to it. But then when you get to the bottom of the ninth, D.A., just incredible theater, because you know Kelly Jansen and the problem he's had. When he comes in that game, you're thinking, all right, maybe the Rays got a shot. Maybe the Rays got a shot. But the moment a Rosarena didn't hit one out to basically give the Rays the win, and they're bringing up Phillips. And I even had to look on my phone and go, who? Who is this? And the Rays play in the AL East. And the fact that he becomes a hero, and not only that, a Rosarena falling down is like the ultimate gas moment, because this guy has had how many big moments in the postseason? He's going to fall down, and this is how they're not going to win the game. Then he gets up, throw away. It is unbelievable the way that unfolded. And I learned a valuable lesson that night, D.A., and that is when you see bets odds and evens in Major League Baseball, don't take it. Because I bet an even number that the game would end in. Mm. And because a Rosarena fell down, I had a shot at extra innings to get two other runs, and he scored and ruined everything for me. So I learned a very valuable gambling lesson in that ninth inning as well.
Okay, well, that's a win. Phillips is down to two outs, two strikes, okay? And if the Rays don't get a clutch hit here, it's a 3-1 series lead with Kershaw coming up in game number five. The series might as well be over. So they've got to get a hit here. And the Rays, as you said, bring up a dude named Phillips that nobody's ever heard of. And of course, down to his final strike, laces a base hit into center field to score the game-tying run. Okay, they've tied the game up at this point in time. And then the thing of all things, the Dodgers boot the ball in center field, allowing a Rosarena to circle from second and around third, only because the ball is booted. The ball is booted, and so now the relay throw is coming in late. A Rosarena is running around third base, and he's going to be meat at the plate. Even though the relay throw or the throw itself is going to be late, after the boot, it's okay because a Rosarena can't make it to home. As the throw is coming in, a Rosarena realizes this and tries to double back and falls down. Okay, now officially you are toast.
Yep.
You're going to either be caught in a pickle, run down, or just get tagged out. because of the frantic nature of this, and Rosarena, who was the MVP of the LCS, by the way, and nobody's ever heard of him until this season, the catcher for the Dodgers is seeing this out of the corner of his eye and gets distracted. And as the throw comes in, he's got all the time of the world, all of the time of the world, because Rosarena is on his face down the third base line. He gets frantic, tries to quickly catch it and scoop it and sway it right across the bag, thinking a Rosarena is coming in, and instead boots it, misses the ball entirely. Ball goes to the backstop. A Rosarena can now pick himself up and slide headfirst into home plate for the walk-off win. The whole thing was so insane. Every part of it is insane. It has to happen like that for it to happen like that.
Yep.
In center field, it has to be booted. A Rosarena has to be late on rounding third. He has to fall down so that the catcher kicks away the ball. I mean, every part of it is so crazy and insane. And then the Rays are coming out of the dugout and they're just chasing one another. Phillips is doing the airplane arms around center field. This is also a game that should have been played at Tropicana Field, because this was game four. It would have been a Rays home game. So they get the walk-off. But it's like 80% Dodgers fans in attendance. And so they're celebrating almost a road game, a neutral site game. Everything about game number four, we will remember. It reminds me also of that, was it Rangers Cardinals, the crazy comeback where the Rangers are down and they're absolute. It's one strike. It's one out. That's all they need. And then the Cardinals and David Eckstein, was it, just come all the way back. There's all the crazy things that have to happen for the Rangers to lose that game. It felt a lot like that, where you just go, I'll never see a World Series game that nutty again.
And outside of Kershaw, last night was so important for Mookie Betts, because Mookie Betts, in the first year of this now long deal with the Dodgers, if they end up, after he flubs around the ball in center field, if they end up cascading into a couple losses and lose the World Series, and the Dodgers pressure of not mounting continues to happen, I mean, then you're only looked at, if you're Mookie Betts starting next year, as, yeah, you were great, but remember when we had that game one and you flubbed around the ball in center field? I mean, that was so important for Mookie to make sure they took care of business last night.
It was, game four is just an all-timer, and this series has had everything, and both these teams are so deserving of winning a World Series, that just Fox has gotten everything they could have wanted. And oh, by the way, Buck on that final call in game four was awesome. It is so zany. It is so discombobulated. You don't know what is happening, and Buck nails it. He absolutely nailed it. He had the excitement, but he was also organized, and you could follow what was happening, even though on the field it seemed completely insane. He was great.
With bacon.
With the bacon. All right, 855-212-4CBS is the phone number if you want to jump into the World Series. Also on Twitter, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. When we come back, it's a momentous Monday. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Smiling like Little Mo every morning. It's a momentous Monday.
Every day can be a better day despite the challenge. All you gotta do is leave it better than you found it. It's gonna get difficult to stand, but hold your balance. I just say whatever, cause there is no way you'll found it.
I just think people should know that if you stay positive, everything will be fine. You just eat, drink, and breathe positive thoughts. That's all you gotta do, and everything will be good.
Got that right, Little Mo. And on Mondays, we bring you an inspirational sports story. I'm gonna take you out to the UK. Michael Dulligan, who has Down syndrome during the coronavirus pandemic. Unfortunately for him, he's been really limited in who he can talk to, who can he can interact with, for obvious health reasons. So he took to Twitter last week and tweeted, "Hi, everyone. Just wanted to introduce myself. My name's Michael Dulligan, 41 years old. I have Down syndrome. I support Everton. and I hardly have any friends on here on Twitter. Thanks. I'm trying to just be friendly. I love to talk to anybody. Cheers. Everton saw this, the English Premier League team, and said, "Hi, Mike. Thanks for all of your support. You'll always have a friend in us." Well, once Everton actually drew some attention to Michael Dulligan's tweet, he got bombarded with friend requests from all over the Twitterverse of Everton fans wanting to support him and be friends with him. And he started interacting with them. Everton's players also replied and said, "Hey, drop me a line anytime." And then the kicker, their owner and chairman, Bill Kenwright, sent a letter to Michael Dulligan. He said, "I'm not on Twitter," but he sent a full page letter thanking him for his support of the team and sent him a bunch of jerseys and scarves and sweaters, saying that, "Hey, now you get some Everton stuff, and hopefully we would love to have you here at the training grounds as well." So this Twitter user who was feeling lonely and didn't have a lot of friends and didn't have the social interaction because of the pandemic just tweeted, "Hey, I'm an Everton fan and I'd love to talk to anybody," was not only filled up with friend requests, but also got a whole bunch of Everton stuff sent to him from the chairman and an invite to their training facility. At last count, Mike Dulligan had more than 13,000 Twitter followers after all of this. So it just goes to show you how cool the world can be. And Ken Wright, the chairman of Everton, saying, "You're an inspiration to all of us." That he's just stayed positive through the whole thing. And that through it, he said, "Michael, you're an inspiration to us all in difficult times. You've shown the world that we're just one big happy family. And that once you support us, you're never, ever short of friends." So great job by Everton. Great job by just the Twitterverse coming to support of this guy. And I love stories like this. Michael Dulligan, who has Down syndrome, just saying, "Hey, I'm looking for friends," and got 13,000 of them and a hand-personalized letter from the chairman of his favorite soccer team. Awesome. Really, really awesome. That is your momentous Monday story for the week. You know, last segment we were talking about the World Series and the crazy end of game number 4, and Mraz was just badgering Mookie Betts, saying Betts is just going to be remembered forever if they don't win this World Series for butchering the play in center field. And you were on such a run, I didn't want to stop you, but I'm like, I don't think that was Mookie Betts in center field. I think he was replaced at that point in time. And sure enough, Bogues corrected us during the break. That was not Mookie Betts who booted the ball in center field in game 4.
Throw me in the bathroom. Throw me in the bathroom. And I knew yesterday when it happened, because that night when it happened, I'm with two other guys who said it was Mookie Betts. There's somebody else that works CBS Sports, where I can throw him under the bus, who since deleted a tweet talking about Mookie Betts. And yesterday, when I rewatched the play, I said, okay, it wasn't Mookie Betts. And I had it still in my stupid mind this morning because of laughing about Mookie Betts. And then I still go on the run of Mookie Betts. I need to go back to bed, throw me in the bathroom. My mistake. I made a boo-boo. Not a good way to start the week.
Yeah, it was Taylor who was in center field that booted that ball that led to the chaos at the end of game number 4. What was the tweet about that was deleted that you're talking about from a CBS Sports Radio peer?
It was, well, it's funny because there's still a couple other tweets about the play-up, and it was in the midst of that going, you know, this is why Mookie Betts can't be in center field. The guy doesn't have a feel for it after playing. It was something to that extent. And I remember reading that real time going, man, that was Mookie Betts. And, yeah, that conveniently is left out of a little thread I see about the play, which is interesting. And I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus because I still went on a little bit of a rant there. And apparently Bogusev, Baskerzin or somebody might have also called him Mookie Betts. So I don't know, in one of the plays, the craziest plays in World Series history, you now have had about 15 people stumble over thinking it was Mookie Betts, which is just atrocious and maybe a bad sign for this Dodgers-Rays World Series.
Chris Taylor.
Yes.
Chris Taylor was the center fielder who booted the ball. Sunday, the NFL on CBS features a matchup of two elite teams fighting for division supremacy when the Steelers bring their ironclad defense, maybe steelclad, to Baltimore for a battle with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, plus a key AFC East showdown between the Bills and the Patriots. Join us, JB and the guys, as they get you set for all of the day's action on the NFL Today starting at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific Sunday. The NFL is on CBS. I don't know if you noticed this. I don't know if it was last week. It might have been last week in preparation for Steelers-Titans. The CBS read said an AFC Central showdown. It was Steelers-Browns. Two weeks ago, we were promoting the Steelers-Browns game, which is the Steelers blowout, and it said an AFC Central matchup. And I'm thinking, who is writing this copy? It hasn't been the AFC Central since 2001. You are 19 years behind on the divisional realignment to call it an AFC Central matchup, and it got through the copywriters.
Which is interesting because you would assume somebody writing copy like that is very young that may not even know that there was an AFC Central.
Exactly. It defied all logic that somehow, normally, the 20-something-year-old sales team that writes this type of stuff would remember the AFC Central. And I corrected it because I knew, obviously, it hasn't been the Central in years, but I'm thinking somebody on this network is going to say AFC Central matchup this week. I know it's going to happen. I don't know who did it, but I'm sure somebody did.
Of course.
And listeners had to be like, what? The AFC Central? What are you talking about?
To be fair, Jody Mack still calls it the Pac-8, so maybe there's somebody out there calling it the AFC Central.
I mean, guys, and let's be honest, too. A lot of that copy comes to people who you'd think never even knew that football existed.
Right. So to
spin things to a guy stuck in 2001 is an impressive change of course.
Like, do you think the copywriter that said the Steelers' ironclad defense knows their nickname's the Steel Curtain? Or do you think...
No chance.
Going through a thesaurus of what lockdown defenses.
Yeah,
right.
Googled
right.
Football metaphors.
Oh, exactly. Right, cliche... Right, metaphor for defense. That's their ironclad defense. They don't even know that their nickname's right. The Steel Curtain. No
Do
idea.
You think they know that that wasn't Mookie Betts in center field?
That they knew.
Bogues, game four was just insane, and I brought up that Rangers-Cardinals, right? Rangers-Cardinals 2011, was it?
Yeah. That's the David Fries series. That game was, I think, 10-9, 11 innings.
Oh, that's the
innings.
David Fries, not the David Eckstein.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think the Rangers were three times, they were one out, if not one strike away from winning game six to win the World Series. And they lost that game because, and that comes up because it was, I think they blew three saves in that game. The Dodgers blew three saves on Saturday because every guy that gives up a lead technically blows a save, and it was just we relived baseball mayhem Saturday night, Sunday morning because of that game four.
That's right. I mean, that has to be, doesn't that go down in history as one of the greatest, craziest, wildest World Series games ever?
Well, I mean, it makes no sense that Brett Phillips wasn't on their ALCS roster, got back on for the World Series, hadn't had an at bat in what, 3 weeks, hadn't had a hit in longer than that, and all of that ends on a 1-2 cutter that he fights off at a center field, and then multiple mistakes. A Rosarena pulls a Daniel Jones running too fast around third base and falls. It was just, and it can only happen in baseball.
Right. That game 6, 2011 is Cardinals and Rangers. The Rangers lead the series 3-2. In game 6, they lead 7-5 in the bottom of the ninth with 2 outs, which is when David Fries hits the triple to right field where
Cruz, right?
Right. Nelson Cruz totally misplays the ball, doesn't know how deep it's going. Fries, that would have been the final out of the game and the World Series. It goes over Cruz's head for a triple, which scores 2 to make it 7-7, right? And then it goes into extras. And it goes into the 10th inning. There's another comeback by the Cardinals in the bottom of the 10th inning. They trail 9-7 in that game in the bottom of the 10th. So they trail by 2 runs again. Bottom 9, they come back all the way again to tie things up. And then they end up winning it on a David Fries home run in the bottom of the 11th to win the game 10-9, and then would go on to win in game 7 as well. That's probably slightly crazier, but game 4 of this one was pretty insane itself.
And then is that the game where Buck goes, "We'll see you tomorrow night," like his dad did?
Yes.
Is that the game where he called? That was the same game? Okay.
Same game.
I couldn't remember.
So the David Freese home run is when he says, "And we will see you tomorrow night."
Yes.
Yeah.
Arguably his best baseball call of all time.
Game 4, though, the end of that, I mean, having done play-by-play yourself, Bogues, wasn't how Buck called an insane carnival-like final play pretty impressive?
Yeah, we get a lot of pseudo Little League home runs in high school baseball here on Long Island, so we're kind of used to mayhem, but that was very easy to get trapped on all of that. Plus, you throw in, he's got to use a Rosarena in the middle of all of that as too, which could very easily trip you up as well. So, I mean, it was perfect. He didn't talk the entire time, but he was right on every single thing. It was as good as you can be in that moment with the play doing you no favors because it was so weird and so all over the place and so unforeseen, and the stage was so big, it was almost flawless.
Imagine that play happened in the division series and it was John Sterling having to call it during Yankees race. Would we even know what happened? Would you have a clue what happened?
No way. No way. But it would have given us a drop forever, so that's unfortunate that it did not happen. Did Buck know that it wasn't Mookie Betts in center field?
He said no name. He said no name. He didn't even try it.
Nobody knew. Somebody was in center.
All right, AB, what do we got on the headlines this morning?
Guys, it was only the fifth meeting of unbeaten teams this late in a season. The Steelers racing to a 27-7 lead in Tennessee, then hang it on for a 27-24 W. Steven Gostkowski missing a 45-yard field goal with 19 seconds left. Here's a relieved Ben Roethlisberger.
We'd like to have a complete game. We'd like to have a second half like that first half. But, you know, they're a professional team. They make adjustments, and they made some. And I didn't make enough plays in the second half.
He threw three picks that fueled that Titans rally. But Pittsburgh is still 6-0, continuing its best starts in 78. And the franchise has still never lost when leading by 20 points or more. The Cardinals storm past the Seahawks 37-34 in OT on Sunday Night Football. Arizona was down 10 late in regulation, then had Zane Gonzalez miss a 41-yard field goal in OT, but they picked off Russell Wilson for a third time, and Gonzalez hit from 48, with Seattle falling. Every NFC team now has a loss. The Niners shame the Patriots 33-6. That's the worst home loss under Bill Belichick. The Chiefs dumped the Broncos 43-16 in snowy Denver. The Bucks ran away from the Raiders for a 45-20 win in Vegas. And the Packers hammered the Texans 35-20. Houston's 1-6. So J.J. Watt did not want to discuss Aaron Rodgers' 4 touchdown passes.
He played very well today.
What'd he do that made him play well?
Threw the ball to the receivers and they caught.
I think that's John McClain asking.
That's definitely John McClain.
Legendary John McClain.
Yeah.
And while finishing with, he threw it and they caught it.
That's the voice of the guy that says, "She's a bad girl, Damon." That drop is John McClain, longtime Oilers Titans or Oilers Texans writer for the Houston Chronicle. And now he's saying, "Well, what made him so good? He threw it, they caught it."
Watt, by the way, one of the Texans being mentioned in trade rumors ahead of the deadline next week. Yeah, pending free agent, you could theoretically move him. Because don't forget, I don't know if you mentioned this before, they don't have a first or a second round pick this year because of Laramie Tunsil. So they need to get back whatever capital they can get right now. Yeah, the Dolphins have their first round pick. So the Dolphins.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. After taking
the Dolphins
could
have a top five pick out of that?
Yep.
The Dolphins, ironically, could end up with Trevor Lawrence and Tua because of, right. Because of the Texans trade.
Odell
Beckham
Jr.
Oh, man, Bill O'Brien stinks.
Odell Beckham Jr. getting an MRI today to diagnose that left knee injury. The Browns reportedly worried it's serious. Beckham hurt trying to make a tackle after a Baker Mayfield pick on their second play from scrimmage. Cleveland, though, won without him in Cincinnati, 37-34 on Baker's fifth TD pass. Donovan Peoples-Jones caught it with 11 seconds to go. Tonight, we've got the Bears and the Rams. LA is third in the NFC West. This morning, a win behind those Cardinals thanks to that win last night. No carryover from Saturday's remarkable rally that we just discussed for those Rays. They were down 2-0 immediately in Game 5 with the Dodgers and never caught up. Their manager, Kevin Cash.
Offensively, we got to do our part a little earlier, set a tone. And on the pitching front with Glass, they got to him quick, drove his pitch count up. Look, but we're just going to have to, you know, take the off day and bounce back.
Tyler Glass now allowed all four LA runs over five. The Rays offense couldn't score with two on and no outs in the fourth. Then had Mike Brasso and Randy Arozarena leave two on in the eighth. Clayton Kershaw, three relievers, getting LA a 4-2 win, a 3-2 series lead. Game six is tomorrow night. Wisconsin QB Graham Mertz has reportedly tested positive for COVID-19. A confirmed positive means no games or practices for 3 weeks. Mertz threw five TDs in Friday's opener with Illinois, replacing the injured Jack Cohn. And much to Sean's delight, there's a NASCAR playoff race this morning in Texas because of rain yesterday. They hope to start at 9 Central. D.A.? Back to you.
I let Bose roll right through that Patriots story because we're going to get to this next hour. But boy, is it bizarre to watch the Patriots be a bad football team. They're really a bad football team, which gives Mraz life here. Again, I don't think they're going to pick in the bottom three because there's so many bad football teams out there. But it is legitimate that the Patriots are a bad football team. And I have to say, Oh boy. Oh man, is that good eating, huh? Turn on the tube on a Sunday and the Patriots stink. They're getting run over by no names. This is awesome. I love this new NFL world. This is wonderful. More on this coming up here next hour. When we come back, the bigger choke job over the weekend, the Falcons or Penn State? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Are hard. Your sports radio show doesn't have to be.
From the Falcon 11 yard line, down by six, final play of the game. Stafford empty out of the gun. He's got it back. Looks, pumps one, steps up, looks, throws end zone.
Yes!
Carr!
Yes!
Down Detroit Lions! TJ Hawkins!
Yes!
They did it! They've tied it! They're an extra point away from winning this game!
I was mad as hell. Yeah. I was trying not to. My momentum took me in. It's kind of crazy. Last time I played Detroit, I went down, and this time I end up scoring. It's like, what goes around comes around.
Todd Gurley, brutal. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's going to keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. Two remarkable collapses over the football weekend. One on Saturday night when Penn State has a lead and the football near the goal line and then loses in overtime with a two-point conversion to Indiana. And then yesterday the Falcons just continue to falcon as Todd Gurley, you heard there on Lions radio, goes into the end zone instead of taking a knee, sliding down before the end zone and draining more clock for the win. And then they end up losing as well. It defies explanation. It defies logic that somehow coaches are not impressing upon their players what to do here. It defies logic. Everybody in the stadium and watching at home knows what you cannot do is score too fast. And you might ask yourself, and I ask myself this question, when did this change? You know, this was never a thing 20 years ago, 30 years ago, where players were told, don't score. Scoring was still your best defense, right? Your best defense is a good offense. So score and put the pressure on the other team to have to answer. When did this change? Well, kind of most famously, you remember Ahmad Bradshaw in the Super Bowl against the Patriots in 2011, kind of turning around and doing a nesty plunge back into the end zone, knowing that he was supposed to not get to the end zone, but he did it anyway because of momentum, trying to change his mind at the last moment. I think things changed once offenses became so productive that every lead was still not safe. So draining clock in today's college football and NFL is actually more vital than points, because points can be scored immediately. What you can't do is give your team or give the opponent too much time to score those points. Less time is worth more than more points. So what happened Saturday night to me was the more egregious thing, because Penn State's a top 10 team. They're a top 10 team that has designs at the college football playoff. And it sounds like James Franklin just didn't tell his guys what to do. I mean, Franklin didn't want to talk about it after the game, but Indiana knew, hey, just let them score. Let them score. We'll get the football back. It's our only chance here. And it worked, because Penn State wasn't coached up enough to not score. They end up scoring. They give the football back to Indiana. Indiana then has a minute and a half to go down the field and score a touchdown to the two-point conversion, and then come back in overtime and do the same thing. Now, I will say this. I thought Penn State won that football game. I did not think that two-point conversion by Indiana's quarterback was good. I thought that the ball was down before it hit the pylon. I did not think there should have been a good two-point conversion in overtime. But the call stood. Indiana wins its first top 10 win over an opponent since 1987. I thought that was a bigger choke job, because Penn State has such big expectations, and it was so obvious, hey, just take a knee and we win here. We already have the lead. That's it. You don't even have to kick a field goal. We already have a one-point lead here. We have the lead. You just take a knee, they can't stop the game. We don't have to do anything else. For the Falcons, they actually had to kick the field goal to take the lead. They actually had to do something. Now, if Gurley just sits down to the one-yard line, they kick a chip shot field goal, but at least they still have to kick a field goal. And the Falcons season's already over. But Gurley also knew what to do and didn't do it, because he's done it in the past. And Gurley watching the Lions go down the field and score to win. The Falcons have now had three games this year where their win percentage was 95% or more, and they're 0-3. I mean, come on. Which just goes to show you, Mraz, that the Falcons don't even need Dan Quinn to choke away leads.
There was nobody happier yesterday than Dan Quinn that the Falcons were able to do that, so he could finally not attach himself. But how toxic and how conscious this has to be in every Falcon player's mind, that no matter how big a lead they have, no matter how late a game gets, they seemingly, more times than not now, will always find a way to blow the game. It's incredible. And not just the good teams. Those are the freaking Lions who are somehow going to save Matt Patricia's job now off a game like that.
It's terrible. If you're a Falcons fan, think about the pain that you go through. Just think about the pain as an Atlanta sports fan you go through. Think about what the last 2 weeks have been when the Braves had a 3-1 series lead in the NLCS, and the Falcons have coughed away three different leads in the fourth quarter where they had a 95% chance at winning. Again, defies explanation that it could continue to happen to one team or one town. I just can't even explain it from a Falcons standpoint. And then Arthur Blank on the sideline coming down like, hey, can't wait to celebrate this win.
Oh.
And then putting his hands up like, wait, what just happened? We lost this game too? Woof. When we come back here on the DA show, as we roll along on a Monday morning, man, how about this Patriots team being a legitimate bad football squad?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.